Hey, Stillman.
Hello, Dave.
Oh, that was spooky,
You having a
Still.
haunted evening?
Oh, I just got some chills, I think, running up and down my back. I'm worried. What's going on?
It is a dark and stormy night in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, jeez.
All Hallows' Eve approaches.
Are you all by yourself in that studio?
As far as I know, there is no other human presence.
Well,
But I could be surprised.
I'll let you know if I see anything creeping up on you.
Yeah.
That'd be a decent little horror story. We're recording the
Jeez.
podcast, and you get murdered in the studio while we're doing it.
One can only hope, Dave. I mean, your career would take off, I'm sure, as the surviving host of a.
And we have someone here that could fill your role very easily. We got Jordan Fox is here tonight.
Good evening, guys. How's it going?
Spooky. I feel vaguely menaced.
But you're keeping it together still. I think you're ready. Because tonight, you know what we're celebrating, guys? Halloween.
The occult.
This
Oh.
is going to be our spookiest episode ever.
All Hallows' Eve.
Ooh, so
Oh, man.
spooky. Spook me,
I'll
Dave.
have to.
Today, guys, we're talking about Halloween. We got some spooky stories we're going to share. We're going to talk about Vin Diesel just because he fits in every holiday episode. There's not a place where Vin Diesel doesn't fit in life. And
And
of
The
course,
Witch
we'll.
Hunter just came out.
Oh,
That's
my
true.
goodness.
Spooky.
I haven't seen it yet, though.
I haven't seen it either, but I feel sad about it, and I feel sad I didn't support it more.
I've seen it.
And, well, that's great. Then you can walk us through it, Steele. We'll see. We'll ask you a little bit about it. And we're going to finish up with some spooky songs. And of course, I think Jordan's got some book wisdom for us tonight.
Dave, this is going to be a great one. It's our first holiday theme episode, I think.
And like any good media of any kind, you have to do holiday theme episodes. That's where you make the money, Steele.
This was our bread and butter. We don't need Tang sponsorship for this episode. It's holiday
Yeah.
theme.
If we ever checked the download numbers, we would see that this one is going to download through the roof. But guys, my first question for you is greatest Halloween costume you've ever worn?
This one for me was pretty easy, hands down. Right after I returned from a Mormon mission, I was living with Jordan. You were living next door, and I decided that I would go to Halloween as the angel Moroni, who is a prominent angel in Mormon theology.
That's beautiful. How did it go for you that evening?
I was asked to leave one of the church-themed Halloween parties.
I don't remember
Did you guys
that.
know that? Yeah, they
No,
said
I
that
didn't. I don't remember that.
they
No.
thought that my costume wasn't appropriate for an expression of faith. I don't know what they said exactly, but they just said, "Would you either feel comfortable either changing out of this costume or just heading home for the night? You're glad that you're celebrating Halloween. We just think that you maybe should have been more considerate about your choice of something." And I'm not sure if they said it was because I was a man wearing a dress or because
That's
I
what
was
I would have
blas.
thought.
Yeah, I think it was more the dress
Blasphemy?
code. Less the that I was impersonating a religious figure.
Yeah, because I remember being on, and maybe even that same exact Halloween, that there was a guy dressed up as Hitler and his buddy was dressed up as Mussolini. They were wandering around
Oh
BYU
my God.
campus, so I don't know.
So I had gone to the DI and bought a white dress. It fit me great. We took a piece of like a funnel and glued it onto the end of a big PVC pipe and spray painted it gold. And then I took the phone book and spray painted it gold, so I had some golden plates and a
God.
trumpet. And I was wearing like leather sandals, and I was the Angel Moroni. It was awesome.
That is most triumphant. That is fantastic.
I believe I used that same gold paint later to paint John Stopher's bike gold, including the
Yeah.
tires.
Which was a great move. That bike looked
Yeah,
amazing when you were done with
it
it.
did.
Yeah, who doesn't want a solid gold bike? That's fantastic.
That this is when I moved to Washington, D.C. to go to attend school there, and I lived with a couple other friends, Alan Stopher, and Mr. Dan Jennyjohn. I don't know if he wants me saying his name out loud on this, but I think it's probably safe.
We'll put the voice decoder over his last name. We'll just bleep it out.
Yeah, we're going to have to bleep it.
Might have to bleep that out. But anyway, somehow we were able to convince him to go to this big Halloween dance party as Samson and the two pillars of the temple of the Philistines.
That's not obscure at all. That's everybody probably got that reference right away.
I think they got it. It was pretty obvious. I mean, we had I think we still had the moving boxes from when I moved. And so me and Alan just put these big boxes on, and I think we drew pillars on. Maybe we didn't even bother.
But basically, Doric just columns.
Yeah, right. We just exactly. At one time, I had cheetah print bed clothes, bedding. And so we fashioned a cheetah print toga for Dan, who, of course, was Samson. And it did take some convincing to get him to wear it. But he did cave. And so it was great. So when we show up to this party, you know, me and Alan are just dressed in normal clothes and carrying these boxes. So we got into the middle of the dance floor. We put on the boxes. And then Dan pushed us over, you know, as a big thing. And that was basically the end of the costume.
But, except no one died. No one at the dance died, which was not true to the historical context.
It's true. The building, we ended up, our costumes weren't structural. So the building remained standing. It was like a big barn. It remained standing.
I'm impressed you got Dan to take his shirt off. That was so many of your schemes throughout college were to get him to take his shirt off. We always wanted him to do it when he was drumming, and you guys finally did it.
Yeah. Well, he was still wearing a shirt.
What?
He's wearing a covering of sorts.
Yeah, his arms are exposed. They're right, Jordan? Come on.
I believe so. Yeah, okay. I believe so. I don't think we don't. As I recall, I don't think we have any pictures of this, but
I'm willing to bet that having long hair or a wig would have been a bridge too far. He's like, I'll take off my shirt, but I will not wear long hair like Samson.
No. Well, you know, this was a costume that was put together in the half hour before we left, so
that's a pretty great costume though. I mean, playing a pillar and falling over.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
But guys, if you want to go cuteness sake, you're going to go with my probably greatest costume ever. When I was about 9, a little bit chubby, and I chose to be Bilbo Baggins.
That makes sense.
Dave, when you put this in the thing, I was almost sure that you would have done this in your 20s. And I imagined it being really cute too.
No,
I had no idea this was a childhood costume.
Certainly, way better. 9-year-old, got the pillow under there. I was dressed just like Bilbo from the cartoon Hobbit.
The animated one.
Yeah,
right, and that's what I would figure.
Homemade green pants.
And green jacket, yellow. I got the red belt. And I think I had a cute little pipe I was carrying around. And no one in Houston, Texas had any idea who Bilbo Baggins was at that time.
Well, did you have the hairy feet, Dave?
Yeah. You got to throw a little bit of patches of fur on your feet. Wow. It might have just been on the shoes or something, but it was pretty accurate.
See, the thing is, you're a vanguard. 10 years later, everybody would have known it because of Peter Jackson. But you were kind of John the Baptist for Tolkien in Texas.
I was a step ahead. And, hey, guys, the next year – I asked my mom to sew me a complete Captain America spandex outfit, and she did.
This was unrelated to Halloween, though, right?
Yeah. She just, 10-year-old, and it complete with the little blue underpants on the outside.
Nice. It was, good touch.
Yeah, my mom really came through for Halloween. Both those years, Bilbo and then Captain America the next year. It was great.
Awesome.
Has having multiples increased your love for Halloween because of all the potential costumes in threes that you could do? I mean, it just seems like the possibilities are really amazing. Three blind mice you could do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very close. What do you, can you guys guess what they were last year?
The Three Little Pigs.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. So this year they're picked their own costume. So,
Oh, I got one. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
There you
Depict them in a furnace, and you guys could be like, that would go over really well in Snowflake.
Yeah, people love scriptural themed Halloween costumes here. It'd be a big hit. Actually, I
Especially
might do
involving
Angel
child
Moroni this year.
sacrifice.
Yeah, Dave, you go as Moloch.
Yeah. Wow, that would win Halloween for Arizona.
Get it. Obscure biblical humor. But yeah, this year we've got a dopey. June demanded to be a piggy again. So another piggy. And I don't know. I think Mabel might be Dumbo, maybe. I don't know.
So we're struggling with our Halloween costume because we got a really cute panda outfit handed down, and we're like, this is gonna be great. It's gonna be Cedar. Last year he was a monkey. It was too cute. This year he's gonna be a panda. But we tried the costume on in advance for my mom and found out it was too small. Like, we couldn't zip it all the way up, and
Oh
his head got stuck,
no.
and he was crying. And we're like, we might just squeeze it into him and be like, tough it out, kid. It's cute. But I think we're probably going to have to do something else on short notice. Any ideas for short notice costumes for a kid?
You can always go Samson. Go straight back to that. That's good.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a little cold for a toga here, I have to say.
Does he have a green shirt?
Yes.
Okay, so he can be a Ninja Turtle. Just go get it like a baking pan. Those foil baking pans from the store?
Yeah.
Yeah, spray paint it green, tie it to his back, wear his green shirt, get a little bandana for his eyes or whatever, and boom, Ninja Turtle.
Nice. We could
And
do
give him
that.
a little sign that says I'm poor and sad on Halloween.
Yeah.
I have a homemade Ninja Turtle costume.
He won't
If
know the
only they were
difference.
made commercially, Jordan. I mean, we could buy one, but
Well,
I think your
yeah,
idea is much better.
you could go buy one. But that's an easy solution. That solution is obvious. You could go to Target and get one.
It's obvious. What's
No,
Biddy gonna be?
my kid,
Yeah.
Felix, he's a dragon. We got him a little dragon outfit.
That sounds
Oh.
great.
So he's got little wings and he hates the headpiece part of it.
Yeah, that's what
So
made Cedar cry, too.
he rips that off as soon as it comes on. So he's a dragon with the head of a little boy.
Is there a whole family theme, like a Game of Thrones, or?
No,
Yeah, Jordan's
no,
Khaleesi.
no,
You could be Khal Drogo, Jordan.
Well, I could be like the older middle-aged Khal Drogo. Like once he's let himself go.
Spoiler alert, he doesn't make it to middle age.
No, he doesn't.
So sad.
Steele, I'll send you a picture of my Khal Drogo action figure. Sits on my desk. It's
Can't
pretty
wait.
badass, I'm not gonna lie.
Nice.
It's time for spooky stories. Who's got their spooky story that they want to start with?
Okay, I got a story for you, Dave. This is a ghost story. I need to take you back in time to Boise,
Yeah.
Idaho. The late 1990s.
Ooh.
Supernatural things were a regular occurrence in this city at the time, and I was privy to one of them. My best friend Jack Bangeter and I used to travel all over town together in his green Honda. He had taken the doors off the car, which was legal, so it was like having a Jeep Honda. It was pretty awesome. And anyway, we're driving home out near Harris Ranch. It's kind of the edge of town. Just a few houses around the middle of nowhere. It's a long stretch of straight road before we got up to my neighborhood. And as we're driving, it's desert on either side. We're going about 50 miles per hour. And off to the left, I see what seems to be tumbleweed, maybe 150 yards ahead of us. It's just blowing, rolling across the road to the left. It comes into the headlights of the car, it raises up in the air like wind's blowing it up in the air. And when the lights strike it, it just appears pure white and strange. It's not tumbleweed. It's nothing else we recognize. Blows up into the air. It's about 10 feet high, passes just to the right of the car in the air. It's still about 100 feet away. And then it disappears. It's gone. And I'm getting chills and goosebumps just thinking about this. I look over at Jack. He looks over at me and I said, "Did you see that?" And he said, "Yeah." And I was like, "What was it?" And he said, I don't know. We drove to the rest of my house in silence. We just didn't talk about it. Anyway, the next night, Jack has just dropped me off at my house, and he's driving home on the same stretch of road. And he's driving alone in his car, and all of a sudden, he feels a frantic tapping on the back of his elbow. Just
No.
And he's just like, he's just like looking straight ahead. He's like, oh. And then he feels this frantic tapping, and he can't look back. But he reaches back behind him, and he feels a hand, a human hand on his arm. He grabs it. He grips it as hard as he can. It comes loose, and he throws it out the open window because there's no door. And this hand goes flying out the window, driving 50 miles per hour, and he does all he can not to pull off the road and just make it home, petrified in terror, and he calls me when he gets home to tell me this story, and he's clearly shaken up. As we're talking, we're thinking about what it could have been. I mean, this is unsettled, Jack, because we saw this ghostly apparition the night before. The next night, a human hand that comes off detached and flies out his window has been tapping his arm insistently. And then we remembered, earlier that day, we had taken a surgical glove and blown it up and tied it to his emergency brake. And so it was a blown-up surgical glove that had been tied to his emergency brake. When he was driving so fast with the doors off, the wind had just started wrestling it, so it was like flapping up and hitting him in the arm. And that's what he had detached and thrown out the window. We still don't know what the ghost thing was the night before, but it was way less scary once we remembered that we had done that. And man, oh man, though, for those few hours in between, it was probably the most terrified and amazed that we had ever been. Closest call with the supernatural.
Oh, you should have just left it. Don't give us the explanation. I was ready to wet my pants.
Yeah, it was amazing. Those are still the best scary stories that I've ever had in my life.
So guys, Steele mentioned how when we were kind of discussing this a little bit, how everyone in England believes in ghosts.
Oh,
no
yes.
No one believes in Jesus, but everyone believes in like spooky, haunted ghosts. And
oh yeah, you can just mention ghost story. They've all got one. They're 100% convinced they're real. Definitely not life after death. There's definitely not a God, but there are ghosts, and they know them personally.
Well, who are the ghosts if they're not people that were lived before? Where are the ghosts?
Don't think about it, Jordan. They're just ghosts. Oh, often okay. They're people who lived before. They know but them. I mean, the ghosts will talk to them. They'll bring messages from their dead ancestors and stuff. But
usually they're evil.
Yeah, usually. Vaguely malicious.
So my favorite story I was ever told by an English person. Not just an English person. This is an English gypsy. Jordan, have you ever seen Snatch?
I own that movie, Dave.
Okay, you know how Brad Pitt talks in that movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how English gypsies talk. If I could do the voice, I would do that as I was telling this story, but I can't.
You don't even want to try?
I don't. I could tell you the story, then you could try and tell
it. We'll just edit it in After Effects. We'll just go ahead and dub the voice in over afterwards.
Yeah, put it through the translator.
So this gypsy man was living in a small portable trailer with his family, as most gypsy men actually do. And
I'll tell you ahead of the time, Jordan, we can be sure this story is 100% reliable. I was never told anything that I was vaguely skeptical about by an English gypsy in my 2 years there.
Okay, all right.
From their mouth to God's ear, basically, it's 100% reliable. This story's guaranteed.
Okay, 100%.
So it was late in the evening, and he started to hear a banging at the door, and it was kind of a vigorous bang. So he didn't want to immediately open the door, so he kind of peeked out the window, and it was a dog. The dog was trying to get into his home, and he thought, this is strange. Why would this dog be doing this? He locked the door. He tried to secure it, but the dog was powerful, and this was a poor quality trailer. He could tell that at some point the dog was going to bang through the door. So he had a couple choices to make. he could either go out and confront the dog or try and run away with his whole family. And he thought the only thing that he could do was to go out there. And he looked in the corner of his trailer and he saw a large shovel, just a normal shovel. And he thought, I'll go out there and I'll hit this dog with a shovel. It'll go away. This shouldn't be a big deal. So as the dog kind of backed away from the door, I think preparing for another charge, he jumped out with the shovel, slammed the door shut, and gave the dog a solid smack on the head. This is a blow that should have killed the dog. But the dog looked up, and at this point, he knew this was not a normal dog. The dog's eyes were glowing red.
Oh, my.
And guys, this is just the beginning of his struggle. He struggled with this dog with the shovel until it broke. He fought this dog for well over an hour.
Day and until night. The shovel broke? Or the dog broke?
The shovel. You can't break the dog.
He saw three sunsets. He saw three sunrises. And still, he toiled against the demon dog.
So he was covered in bites, scratches, claw marks, until finally he found the strength within himself to get both his hands around the dog's neck and strangle the dog until finally, this is after several hours of battle, he vanquished the dog. And rather than just leave the dog's carcass there, he felt he had to show respect to this evil spirit and bury the dog.
How did he bury the dog if the shovel was broken?
The shovel had been reduced to toothpicks, Jordan. He had to dig the grave with his bare hands. He used the dog's paws.
And he finally succeeded in burying this dog. And he went into the trailer and he collapsed in pain and fatigue. And when he woke in the morning, he looked outside. And where the grave should be, it was as if he never dug. The dog's body had disappeared.
What? And
that was the end.
Dave, this may be connected, but I met a guy, an English gypsy, who told me about once meeting an 8-foot-tall levitating Satan and how he, at one point in his life, this guy had the power to resurrect dead birds. So he may have been on the scene and had been involved with his dog, bringing him back. He may have been a revenant under this other gypsy's control. You never know.
8-foot-tall floating Satan's dog that was literally the dog that was attacking.
Yeah, so my guy was in Worksop. Where was your guy? Was this Skegness?
No, this was in Staffordshire.
Oh, Staffordshire. The Potteries.
Yeah. Pottery, known for pottery and for the occult.
That's amazing. Perfect for Halloween.
So that's two spooky stories. Jordan, do you have a spooky tale?
I do. Do we have time for this?
Yes.
This is actually a story that was told to me while I was at scout camp. This was one of those organized scout camps. So I probably was maybe 12.
Not one of the do-it-yourself scout camps, if y'all remember.
No. This was an organized one. This is one of those ones where they've got, like, the scouting competitions, you know, where they tie a string above the fire and you race with the other – you start a fire and you have to race to who breaks the string first with their fire, who can build their fire up.
Oh, yeah.
Big enough, fast enough.
Yeah, and if you don't build it fast enough, that some kid gets burned to death because he's tied up in the rope.
Yep, exactly.
High stakes.
You get sacrificed to Moloch.
Mormon scout camp is off the chain.
It's intense. It's a lot of animals die.
It is. And just like English gypsies, every story ever related at scout camp is also 100% verifiable. They're all true.
It's true. Well, this one terrified me, and it was told to me while we were at night in the dark, sitting around the fire, right before we went to bed.
Oh, good timing.
And, it's great timing. And I did not sleep that night. I was terrified. But anyway, so the story goes like this. He says, you remember that road we drove up the mountain here to get here? I said, yeah, I remember that road. I said, well, I'm going to tell you the story of of something that happened on that road. And so this story gets pretty graphic pretty quickly. And so what happens was there was an employee of the scout camp, a young woman in her 20s. She works at the scout camp and she wants to go home for the weekend. So she walks down the road down to the highway and start to hitchhike to catch a ride. And so a trucker picks her up and drives her a little ways, and then he pulls over and attacks her, brutally attacks her. Mm. And he drags her out into the woods. He cuts off her arms at the elbows and her legs at the knees and leaves her there to die. And then goes back to his truck and drives away. So already he's telling the story to 12-year-old boys, okay? So already I'm like terrified. I'm like, people do that, you know? I just horrified. So then he says, then it started to rain, and it rained, and she was on a hill, and the mud came down, and the mud clogged up her wounds and stopped her from bleeding to death. And she had to drink the muddy water to survive, and she had to eat the bugs and the ants that were crawling over her to live. And eventually she got the strength where she could crawl on her nubs. And then she got so fast on her nubs, she could chase down rabbits and catch rabbits. And she became wild and feral. And she could chase down coyotes and rabbits with her teeth. And she sharpened her teeth on a rock so they would be pointed. And then she hated men because of what had happened to her. And she could smell men anywhere. And she would chase down the men. You couldn't outrun her on her nubs. And she would chase you down and tackle you and kill you, bite you to death with her sharp teeth. And this is the story that he told. And so I'm sitting there. I was terrified for a lot of different reasons. Yeah. And anyway, I didn't sleep that night. I kept imagining that something was walking around my tent.
Oh no.
Crawling around my tent, scraping it, trying to find a way in.
Nubbing around your tent, I believe is the proper term.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I may have started crying as well. I'm not going to say, obviously I did, because you guys know me.
I'm surprised you made it through the retelling here, Jordan.
Yeah, oh, I know. And so he had to, he felt really bad. He had to, he apologized and told me he made it up and everything and blah, blah, blah. And even on the drive home, he kept apologizing to me almost the whole way back because he felt so bad that I'd gotten so terrified of nubs.
Like all the other kids were just cool with it. They're like, good night, everybody.
I don't know. I don't remember the other. I was not focused on them.
This guy sounds like a real gem.
Yeah.
If there's truth out there, you got to share it. Even if the boy is 12, you can't shield him from it. They need to know that there is a nubs out there and that she wants to destroy you. You can't shield children from the truth. Yeah. There's demon dogs out there. There are disembodied hands that will grab you. And there's a woman with just nubs that will catch you.
One of these days, Dave, I'm so curious about Steve and Betsy.
I'll tell you real quick because it's just short. So Ariane, my wife, kind of believes in ghosts and creepy stuff way more than me. And anytime she tells me something, I roll my eyes. Like her mom, anytime she smells cigarette smoke, she knows that that's her mother nearby because she was a smoker. So one day, a couple weeks ago, the girls have been playing upstairs for a few hours, and they're talking a lot about Steve and Betsy that they were playing with upstairs. And so my wife's immediately like terrified. She's when I get home, she's talking to me like, and the house we live in, it's an old house. It's like 50, 60 years old. She's like, the girls told me they're playing with Steve and Betsy upstairs. And she's super freaked out. And I just don't care. I'm like, they made up names. And she says, no, they never make up names. They don't ever do that. They were playing with Steve and Betsy upstairs. Something's happening.
Betsy does sound like the name of a dead person, I will say.
Yeah, have you ever met a live Betsy?
Nope. And I bet your daughters haven't either.
They have not. So I'm going to ruin this like how you ruined your hand story. The next day, Ariane watched an episode of Curious George with the girls, and Steve and Betsy are on Curious George.
Mystery solved.
Close call. There could
that was a close shave.
There might have been dead ghost children in my house, but fortunately, it's just Curious George.
I don't know if you've considered the possibility. You might want to mention it to Ariane that these ghosts are pretty smart. They might have chosen the name Steve and Betsy because Curious George would provide a cover story.
I'll bring
your parents in the dark, but
yeah, it's also not impossible that the ghosts may be Steve and Betsy at the same time as the characters in Curious George are also Steve and Betsy.
Yeah, did you ever think of that?
Yeah, it could be it could all be a sign, some type of sign that some energy is gathering here, much like
be avenged.
Yeah.
Have you dug up the old property records of your home yet, Dave?
No, I have not. I'm not certain if there's a burial ground nearby.
If you dig a grave with a dog's corpse the next morning, does it appear that a grave has been dug up, or does it magically? That's something you need to do tonight. Just go out with some dog paws, dig a hole, and see what happens in the morning.
I will do that. It's for the safety of my family. And to get Steve and Betsy out of my house somehow, I'm willing to do whatever it takes.
Well, that's obviously step one, or step zero, basically. I mean, any thinking person would do that. So then get back to us once you've diagnosed step one.
Yeah, I got my dog paws. They're in the dresser. I just haven't gotten them out yet. I've been putting it off. I know, it's ridiculous.
Some poor dog nubs out there without his paws.
But the visual on nubs, like, I can't stop visualizing it. It's
terrifying.
Dave was going to say amazing, Jordan. I don't know if there's a difference between terrifying and amazing, but maybe Dave could explain what he meant by that.
Just a high-speed woman in her 20s moving only on nubs. Like, imagine the speed she's going at to catch a rabbit. That's impressive.
Yeah. Yes. It's also terrifying for a number of different reasons. Like I said, that she's in that situation in the first place is terrifying.
Yeah, it's not good.
But she made the best of a bad situation.
Yeah. So I was scared of the trucker. I was scared of nubs. I was already scared to be at scout camp in the first place.
So, Jordan, do you like being scared? I know you wanted to talk about some of your favorite scary media.
Yeah. No, I don't like being scared particularly.
Good. I hate it.
So most of these that I put on here aren't actually scary.
They're just creepy, or what's the word that you'd use for them?
They're fun.
Oh, okay.
What's fun about Pan's Labyrinth? I've watched that movie.
That one's creepy. There maybe are on the list. There's two that are legitimately Blair Witch and Pan's Labyrinth. To me, are legitimately creepy.
Yeah,
that's all of them.
So, do you have like a favorite scary franchise or media? What's one of your top ones?
Well, I tend to like the kind of the sillier ones more. So I don't know if you ever saw there was an old TV show called Tales from the Crypt. It was based off, a lot of the stories were based off those old EC Comics stories.
Mm-hmm.
So they, like, every episode started out with the Crypt Keeper. It was like this basically like desiccated corpse.
He looked a lot like Hugh Hefner.
Wispy hair.
For our listeners.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe so, yeah, especially recently. But he would come on and he would like kind of cackle and tell us something. And then the story would start. It would be, you know, whatever, something happens. And then there's usually some kind of unsuspected twist. And then usually it doesn't end so well for the main character.
No.
That's how the end is dead.
And then it would cut back to the Crypt Keeper and he would cackle some more. And then he would, you know, pronounce the whatever the moral of the tale had been, you know, and then laugh.
Was that just on late night network TV? What was that on?
I don't remember, but I wasn't, I didn't have a lot of monitoring. One of my favorite things used to do when I was a kid was they had this USA, I think it was, had this series called Up All Night.
Mm.
And they would show like ridiculous horror movies. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Night of the Lepus.
Ooh.
Have you heard of this one?
Is that like a giant rodent?
Yeah, giant rabbits.
Yeah.
Giant rabbits again. So basically they would show like the town, and the town would like, the townspeople would be concerned, like, oh, we're in trouble. You know, there's nothing going on. The scientist guy's like, we got to get ready. The Lepus are coming. No, we're not worried about it. And then they would cut to like this scene of rabbits like running through a field. But they would put like little miniature trees and stuff to make the rabbits look giant. And then they had to slow it down. They like did it like half speed. And then they would play the sound like boom, 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 boom. Like they were supposed to be rumbling. But they just looked like regular rabbits.
Because
they were. They were just regular rabbits. Anyway.
Rabbits attacking a town in the actual film?
They were regular-sized rabbits attacking a miniature-sized town.
Oh, man.
And then people pretending as though they were being attacked.
Talk about blowing up myths on this show.
Yeah, we changed the name to Mythbusters, too. T-O-O.
Yeah. Yeah. But one of my other favorite franchises is called Jeepers Creepers.
What's the matter with those peepers?
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on in Jeepers Creepers? I've never seen it.
Oh, you never? Okay, so
are these movies or the TV show?
This is a movie. These are two. There are at least two. There are two movies, and it kind of like plays off the story of like locusts. You know how certain species of locusts will like. They stay in underground for like 20 years or whatever.
Oh yeah, and then when 17 year or whatever.
Yeah, and then when they come up, that's like a huge swarm. They cause a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like so the clown from It does that too, I think.
Correct. Yeah. So this is the creeper, and it does the same thing. It's on a cycle, like a 20 year or 25 year cycle, and it comes up, and will do damage, wreak havoc for 3 days, and then go back to its lair. And so it's out in the cornfields somewhere in middle America. I don't remember that it's ever explained to you where, but it's got like, it looks like if it's just standing on the road, it looks like a guy wearing like a duster and a, like a cowboy hat, but it's not. The duster is really huge bat-like wings.
Oh no.
But the hat is real. It does wear a hat. And it basically, what it needs to do is every 24 years or 25 years or whatever it is, it needs to replace and replenish all of its body parts with new ones.
Oh, so just gets them from humans. Go harvest,
right, yeah.
Harvest them.
So, hence, Jeepers Creepers, where'd you get those peepers?
Oh, yeah. From a human.
Right, yeah. So, for example, like at one point he gets some eyes, but he gets some eyes from someone who wears glasses.
Oh, great. Useless.
So he can't see real well. Yeah, so he's got to get new eyes.
Upgrade them. Any supernatural powers involved in this?
Oh, yeah. It can fly. It's super strong. You can't kill it. It's got regenerative properties. You know,
is there anybody
stuff.
In
it's
the
got...
film that remembers 23 years earlier when it came around that like helps you bridge the past?
Now we get into part two.
Oh.
So part one is the creeper comes out and attacks. And then the very first scene of part one is a boy gets taken from a field. And his brother watches the creeper fly off with him.
Mm.
So in the second film is the continuation. The brother and the dad are hunting down the creeper.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
They've waited however long for the creeper to come out. And that's their quest is to hunt it down and catch it.
I'm guessing it sort of doesn't end that well, or maybe it does.
They succeed.
Oh.
And he actually ends up, because the thing is, it only has a certain amount of time before it hibernates. So the movie ends, and he's able to pin it in their barn, actually. It's stuck to their barn, and then it goes into hibernation on the barn. And so, you know, the next part is 25 years later or whatever. He's sitting there waiting for it to wake up.
Well, my favorite thing I just learned about this on the internet is that Francis Ford Coppola, the director of the Godfather trilogy and Apocalypse Now, is the executive producer on all these films. So
it
must be really good.
Yeah, American Zoetrope, that's his company.
They're entertaining.
Are there psychics involved? I read something about psychics.
There might be. Oh, it has a one of the characters kind of gets a psychic bond with it somehow.
That's important.
I can't remember how that happens, and then there he's able to track it down, but it doesn't end so well for him.
It seems like an exposition tool to help you with the psychic stuff. To just if the creeper's just killing people and eating them, how do the people know to fear what to fear? There has to be like some psychic bond where a human's communicating with it and explaining what the creeper's about and all that.
Right. Yeah, in the second movie, I think it is, it's terrorizing some high school kids on a bus.
About time someone terrorized those jerks.
Get stuck in another one. But yeah, so that's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, I like any time high school students are being terrorized as well.
Yeah.
They got what's coming to them.
So I love The Walking Dead. My wife and I watch that routine. Arianne likes that more than I do. She's way into it, but... We don't like scary movies. Like The Walking Dead, we like it because it's the post-apocalyptic and interesting. But it's like scary movies, I have no interest in seeing, and it makes me feel uncomfortable. I'd way rather watch anything with Vin Diesel.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, well, you guys know that I'm an expert on horror. I'm super into it. I watch a lot of action movies, but I'm a kind of a connoisseur of horror films.
Yeah, what's some of your top flicks? What's some of your top films, Stillman?
I saw part of It, Stephen King's It, with mm-hmm. Pennywise the Clown.
Mm.
That scared me. Even just hearing people talk about it scared me. Don't you want it? And I was like, months I couldn't sleep. And I also saw The Woman in White, I think it was called. You see this one, Jordan?
The Woman in White. I'm not familiar with that.
I think it's called that. It's like
Is this a recent film or is this old?
Oh, this would have been like a TV movie.
Oh,
probably.
No, I don't know.
Maybe not The Woman in White. I'm doing a really good job of describing the scary stuff that I've seen. I did see Candyman when I was like 13. There's like a cute older girl who wanted to watch, and I was like, sure. And a bunch of us young guys went over to these girls' house and they watched the scary movie and we're like, all right, maybe they'll want us to hold their hands because they're scared.
That usually works really well. Yeah. One thing I do remember that's forever seared into my mind, I can't remember if it's a Tales from the Crypt or Twilight Zone, but it's Ted Danson. Someone's kidnapped his girlfriend and he's on the beach. And there's a huge hole in the sand. And the man says, in order for you to see your girlfriend again, you have to bury yourself in the neck, up to the neck in the sand. And then what happens is then once he does it, they put a TV monitor that shows that she's also buried neck deep in the sand. And then, of course, the tide comes in and Ted Danson dies.
I remember that one. Yeah. I don't remember what the point of it was, but I remember that one.
That's why they had to cancel Cheers, I understand. Because a big star had just drowned in a terrible, sadistic beach murder.
Ah, jeez. Yeah, I wish all those stories weren't true. I wish the things we were talking about weren't true, but they are. The world's a scary place.
And they permit cameras to just film this stuff without intervening. That's the thing that drives me nuts.
Yeah, who's this cameraman? He's seeing Ted Danson die, and he's just like, oh, this will make for a good TV show.
It's art.
Yeah.
But Steele, you mentioned, you saw The Last Witch Hunter? You got out to the theater?
Definitely. Yeah. No, I mean... There was a 2-minute trailer, which I watched, which is the longest clip of Vin Diesel that I've seen ever. So I basically chalk it up to having watched the movie. I saw all the important scenes. He's got like a real deep voice. He tracks witches down and murders them because he's a hunter of witches.
Yeah.
He also travels in time because he's got a huge beard.
Mm-hmm.
He's very loyal. He's a good guy. No twist there.
No. Wait, is it Jordan, are you, what do you think? Are you going to go see this one?
I probably won't go. We never get out to the movie now these days with the little kid. We just haven't been.
You don't think Felix would be up for it?
No, probably not. No,
that's unfortunate.
The only one I'm guaranteed to see this year is that I did already buy my tickets for Star Wars.
Nice. What does it cost to take a kid to the movies? What age do they have to pay?
I have no idea.
I've taken my girls to the movies, like to see Cinderella and stuff, but it was like the dollar theater, so I paid for them.
Yeah.
And they were into it. But I don't think I'm paying to see Last Witch Hunter. And unfortunately, it sounds like not many people did. It was set up to be an awesome trilogy, but I don't know if we'll even get a sequel. That's the most disappointing thing about it.
Well, who knows? Sometimes it depends on
foreign market.
You know, and stuff like that. So.
Hopefully it's big in Japan, huh?
China. It's China now where you really got to hit it big. And yeah. Diesel's huge over there. The Chinese folks, they love Vin Diesel.
Great. Well, hey, since we're on the topic of Diesel, I circulated an article that's a Vin Diesel character matrix. I haven't seen all the films depicted in this, but did either of you guys take a look?
I did, yeah.
So it's plotting two axes, character traits, loyal versus treacherous, and on the other axis it's cool versus uncool. Mm-hmm. And I was just interested to hear your take about where Vin's characters tend to break down and if this is an accurate representation of it.
I think it's extremely accurate. The only thing that I have some trouble with is his character in The Pacifier is, of course, extremely loyal, as Vin Diesel is, but he's slipped down into the uncool area of the graph, which I don't know if that's possible for a Vin Diesel character.
So if you haven't seen this before, it maps cool versus uncool, treacherous versus loyal, and every one of the characters he's ever played in every movie he's been in is clearly in the far stretches of both cool and loyal. It is impossible for Vin Diesel to be cast as an uncool, unloyal character, except the one exception that Dave just mentioned. This was a great kind of point made by Shea Serrano on Grantland recently.
Yeah, I agree with – I found myself agreeing with him.
His breakdown of Vin's greatest acting scene ever is also extremely accurate and
what was
and
this
just
film
beautiful.
From? His kind of face-by-face breakdown.
It's the original Fast and Furious, Fast and Furious 1. This is what launched Vin Diesel on just to be the worldwide star that he is. And he just showed all the things that he could do in this. It was not just one speech, one monologue, and he shows everything that you can do as an actor in less than 5 minutes.
He also has a nice tricep extension, showing off the strong arm work.
Yeah, you don't put on a tank top if you don't have something to show. Like put a jacket on, guys, unless you're Diesel, then you only wear tank tops. The guy's making good choices all over the place. And if you haven't seen this scene, then you're hurting yourself.
Okay, so here's the question that I wanted to ask both of you. I'm ready, I think, to be introduced into the Diesel thing. I watched the trailer for The Witch Hunter. And Dave, you sent me a clip of D and Diesel.
Uh-huh.
Everybody on that clip, I hated except Vin Diesel. I was like, hey, this guy's like the one legitimate, cool, interesting person in this room. And so I was like, I need to watch one of his movies. It's the longest movie clip I've seen in the last year. It was like 3.5 minutes long. So I'm not like an avid video watcher, obviously. But where do I start? I'm ready to watch my first three Vin Diesel movies. Where should I begin?
First three. What do you think, Jordan?
Well, I would say The Fast and the Furious. Probably.
Okay, I'm only going to watch... Yeah. I'll watch the first one to start.
I think you should watch the first one.
Okay. How about Triple X?
It depends what Diesel you're looking for. This is young Diesel. Fast and Furious. Diesel's still in his 30s. And he's going to give you everything you need from him as young Diesel. And Triple X is also young Diesel, so that's a little bit dangerous.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe the most recent Riddick movie, which I think is just called Riddick.
Yeah, it's cleverly titled.
Yeah.
Okay. And in this one, it's more of a seasoned Vin Diesel. He's killed a lot of people already. So what's another dozen?
Okay. So
and,
I've got
the reason I suggest that one is because it has a lot of, what do you call it, I guess, typical or common like action tropes, but they're done pretty well.
So Riddick, first Fast and the Furious. Now, keep in mind, this is me, guys. I've seen exactly like one action movie, and it was 20 years ago. So don't blow me up. Don't like make my head explode. What of Vin Diesel's films as a third choice do you think I might actually have something positive to say after I see it? So recommend it for me, not just for Diesel, but for me.
I think his strongest film is, of course, Fast Five. It is the most action-packed, probably the best of the franchise. It's so good. So it's hard not to say Fast Five.
Can I watch the Fast and Furious out of order, or that ruined me?
Uh-oh. It doesn't matter.
Oh, it doesn't? Okay.
I was thinking, Dave, Saving Private Ryan. I know he's not a main character in that, but
never saw
his
that.
Performance is really strong.
It's supposed to be great.
And it's very gruesome, though. I've only seen it once. I couldn't watch it again.
Or if you want a voice role, he's done two terrific voice roles. The Iron Giant, which you actually might like The Iron Giant. I might recommend that. It's a really nicely animated cartoon where Vin Diesel plays the Iron Giant.
All right. So I've got some choices. I'm going to watch at least three Vin Diesel movies within the next 12 months.
So do Fast and Furious. I think Riddick. And yeah, I think, what do you think, Jordan? I think he would honestly like Iron Giant.
I would give that a whirl.
In that order or just whatever order?
Whatever. I would say Fast and the Furious, Iron Giant, Riddick.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to walk through Diesel's career a little bit. And then once you've accomplished that, I think you'll want to go back and watch the remainder of the Fast and Furious movies just so you can really appreciate what life is about.
I would like to save the Fast and Furious marathon for some time when we get together as an Awesome City group and just watch them all together.
What? Yeah. In these clips, I watched some of the clips from this Grantland article, and one of them struck me, the clip from Boiler Room. Have you seen this one, Dave?
Yeah, of course.
Where he's selling the bad stocks.
Uh-huh.
So there was a recent movie that came out, I think it was last year or the year before, with Leonardo DiCaprio, The Wolf of Wall Street, that was wild. I think I'm pretty sure his performance got a lot of praise.
Yeah.
So I watched Vin Diesel in that Boiler Room clip, and I couldn't help but think, Leo watched this before doing his scenes. Because some of the scenes from Wolf of Wall Street where he's selling the bad stocks to the people almost exactly mirrors the scene from the Boiler Room.
Wow.
And the kind of swagger and stuff that DiCaprio displays while he's doing it and kind of showing off to the other salesmen around him. Mm-hmm. Almost exactly like Vin Diesel in the Boiler Room. So I just thrown that out there to point out the fact that a lot of these ideas of maybe like what's good acting, who is a good actor and stuff, might be more hype than real. And Diesel may get less credit than he deserves. Just throwing it out there.
And like Diesel says, if the Academy doesn't nominate Furious 7 for an Oscar, it's just not in touch with what's happening in today's movies.
We know that's more fixed. It'd be more corrupt than FIFA if Fast and Furious doesn't win. Throw all the bums out.
That's right.
I hope you do it still. I'm excited to talk to you about them. I think at the very least, you'll really enjoy the Fast and the Furious for comedy purposes. And Riddick, you're going to enjoy Riddick's close relationship with his alien dog. And then Iron Giant, you might actually like.
Thanks. I'm excited. Yeah.
So guys, let's finish this up. Unchained Melodies. This week, of course, it's Halloween. So what better way to celebrate than with some spooky songs?
I've got a great one. I know your love of Walt Disney, Dave. This is Thurl Ravenscroft and some others called the Mellomen singing the song Grim Grinning Ghosts. This is from Haunted Mansion. Yeah, there we go.
Creaking the tombstones quake. Tombstone mouthers wane and wake. Happy haunts materialize. And begin to vocalize. Grim grinning ghosts are to socialize. Now don't close your eyes and don't try to hide.
Or a silly spook may sit by your side.
Shrouded in a dark disguise.
They pretend to terrorize. Grim grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know why you faded that out. We should just finish the show on that one. Just keep it going, you know?
You know how much it would change your life if you could sing like Thurl Ravenscroft?
I wouldn't be living in Snowflake, Arizona.
It had a little surf guitar in there.
I was thinking. It sounded to me like that was probably what's called a Fender Bass 6, which is a big six. It's a six-string bass, but it's like a guitar.
That's just what Dave and I were talking about too before the episode. We thought it definitely sounded like a Fender Bass 6.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Yeah, we considered just doing the theme of songs with a Fender Bass 6 in it, but there was just too many to choose from.
That would be a good list. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, we didn't know if you'd be able to come up with a couple or not, Jordan.
They've been making a comeback lately. People have been using them a little more.
Yeah, you're telling us.
Well, guys, I got kind of a it's a little bit different than your steel. It's just straight up a little bit creepy, a little spooky. Just I want to try Look Out, Look Out from Perfume Genius.
Well, that took a sinister turn.
He was just like so wistfully, nonchalantly telling us there's murders out there.
I know.
Guys, this isn't Happy Songs version of Unchained Melodies. This is Spooky Songs.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Wow. What do you got, Jordan?
I think that I want to go with first is this old-timey Halloween song from Henry Hall, Here Comes the Boogeyman.
Children, have you ever met the bogeyman before? No, of course you haven't, for you're much too good, I'm sure. Don't you be afraid of him if he should visit you. He's a great big coward, so I'll tell you what to do. Hush, 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 here comes the bogeyman. Don't let him come too close to you, he'll catch you if he can. Just pretend that you're a crocodile, and you will find that bogeyman will run away a mile. Say shoo shoo and stick him with a pin. Bogeyman will very nearly jump out of his skin. Say buzz buzz, just like the wasp that stings. Bogeyman will think you are an elephant with wings. Hush, 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 here comes the bogeyman.
Yep, that's Henry Hall. He's, I think those are from the 20s. And they're just great. He's got another one that's kind of creepy called The Teddy Bear's Picnic. It's kind of a classic song too. So if you ever want some old timey creepy stuff to listen to, Henry Hall.
The horns coming in there, that was unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very vaudeville in my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
I can kind of picture him, you know, wearing like the big suit with the bow tie and the tails and doing a little singing and, you know, and they have a little boogeyman coming out.
Yeah.
You know, a little kid with a teddy bear, probably a woman pretending to be a little kid with like a teddy bear and pretending to be a bee or whatever. I don't know.
Mm. And backstage, there's somebody dying.
Yeah, from consumption.
Dave, everybody's dying. We're all dying.
And I'm dying to hear what song you're going to play next, Steele.
All right, so I was thinking I was going to play something from Nick Cave's Murder Ballads album. Oh, but yeah. You already covered the murder ballad, Dave. We got Look Out, Look Out. There's murderers about. So I'm going to go instead with a song that was made famous by Screamin' Jay Hawkins. If Spencer had been our guest, I definitely would have played the Screamin' Jay version because I believe Screamin' Jay was Spencer's actual biological father. He's one of Screamin' Jay's kids. But since he's not on the show, I'm going to play the version I prefer by Nina Simone. This is I Put a Spell on You.
A spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. Stand it. You're running around. You know better, Daddy. I can't stand it 'cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
That little yip. Whew. Man.
She has the best voice.
The one movie that I have seen in the last year is the Nina Simone documentary that just came out. It's really good. What Happened, Miss Simone? So good. Yeah. I didn't know all the details of her battle with mental illness, but really good.
Well, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. What else you got, Jordan?
So I thought that with Halloween and all, there's one genre of music that to me, if music had favorite holidays, this genre of music's favorite holiday would definitely be Halloween.
Rob Zombie?
I didn't choose any Rob Zombie songs, so that would have been good. And yeah, apropos, but I thought about metal.
Oh yeah.
So
I thought about, well, what would be a good one? And there are a few. And I thought, well, I'll just pick one that I've been listening to recently that's kind of got a little bit of a scary theme to it. So this is from a band called Mastodon. They're from the South. I like them because they do what they do and they don't really care. I mean, they were on Letterman a few months ago playing, and like the lead guitar player was just dressed up in all this 70s get up with like bell bottoms and like a really colorful orange shirt and big old 70s sunglasses and platform shoes and a big fake big red afro. He has red hair anyway, but it was just like hilarious. Anyway, this song has it's on their most recent album. I think it just came out. Can't remember the name of it, but this song's called Asleep in the Deep, and the music video is really cool. It was directed by this artist called Skinner. He does like a lot of, I guess you'd call it horror type art, but it's really cool. Psychedelic colors, you know, weird creatures and stuff. And so he created these really weird puppets and stuff. And so the music video is worth watching. It shows the adventure of this cat that goes on this mythical quest through the underworld. And there's all these really, it's really cool. Anyway, Mastodon Asleep in the Deep.
I liked it. Yeah. Well, all the talking of Mastodon you've done over the years, I don't know if I've ever actually listened to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is what I love, Jordan. I think this is great that every time you come on, you always bring music that Dave and I would never have ordinarily played on the show.
Right.
And there's a real variety that we often get cool metal, get progressive rock, we get interesting jazz stuff. I really appreciate the eclectic musical taste and bringing some variety to what we usually play.
Well, thank you. And just so you know, too, later on, that song has a pretty face-melting guitar solo in it. So
I would expect
not surprises.
Go back and check that out.
Send us home.
So my next song, I'm going totally out of my normal genre here. This is by a hip-hop rap, I don't even know how to say it.
Yeah.
Artist named Vince Staples. I don't know what happened. I'm not sure what happened, but I listened to this song and I loved it. I really liked it. And there is just kind of a little bit of a creepiness to it that if you put it on Halloween, it really comes through.
There's definitely something ominous in that kind of instrumentation and the beats there. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that song. I like when a song, every once in a while, a song outside of my normal genre of high-pitched singing male with out-of-tune guitars will grab me and I'll really like it. Well, I think we got some book wisdom. Jordan, did you bring something for us this evening?
Yeah, I don't know if we call it book wisdom as much as it is book love.
Yeah, there we go.
It's a really quick story from one of my favorite story compilations, scary story compilations from when I was a kid. I think everybody of a certain age is familiar with Alvin Schwartz's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
And the illustrations. Oh, yeah, the dripping
the ink.
And...
by Stephen Gammell. They're amazing. And I mean, you just hear some of those words and you'll remember it. The big toe, you know, the girl who stood on a grave, that little poem about, you know, they eat your eyes, they eat your nose, they eat the jam between your toes. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers those, you know, from when we were kids. And so I picked one here that is one of the, it's really short. It's scary. So I thought I'd read it really quick here. And it's called The White Wolf. The timber wolves around French Creek had gotten out of hand. There were so many wolves. The farmers could not stop them from killing their cattle and sheep. So the state put a bounty on them. It would pay a hunter $10 for every wolf pelt he turned in. A butcher in town named Bill Williams thought that was pretty good money. He stopped working as a butcher and started killing wolves. He was good at it. Every year he killed over 500 of them. That came to more than $5,000. It was quite a bit of money in those days. After 4 or 5 years, Bill had killed so many wolves, there were hardly any left in that area. So he retired and vowed never to harm another wolf because wolves had made him rich. Then one day, a farmer reported that a white wolf had killed 2 of his sheep. He had shot at it and hit it, but the bullets didn't have any effect. Soon that wolf was seen all over the countryside, killing and running, but nobody could stop it. One night it came into Bill's yard and killed his pet cow. Bill forgot about his decision never to harm another wolf. He went into town the next morning and bought a young lamb for bait. He took it out into the hills and tied it to a tree. Then he backed off about 50 yards and sat down under another tree. With his gun in his lap, he waited. When Bill didn't come back, his friends started looking for him. Finally, they found the lamb. It was still tied to a tree. It was hungry, but it was alive. Then they found Bill. He was still sitting against the other tree, but he was dead. His throat had been torn open, but there was no sign of a struggle. His gun hadn't been fired, and there were no tracks in the soil around him. As for the white wolf, it was never seen again.
Jordan, when I was a kid, that story was read to me. And I had that Nubs experience you described. I didn't sleep for like weeks. The throat being torn open. I still remember that vividly. Every time I talk to my mom about scary stories, she's like, oh, do you remember the white wolf? And I'm like, yes, I remember the white wolf. Yes, I do.
There are so many stories in that book that are like that, I think, for other people. For me, it was the Wendigo.
Oh.
The Wendigo was scary to me. There were so many. The big toe.
The big toe. I remember that one. That one's kind of funny and scary.
Yeah. There were so many scary ones. So.
Well, I hope no one's scared too much. I hope you guys are able to sleep tonight. And I'm going to just gently fall to sleep tonight, picturing Nubs just scurrying through the forest.
Terrifying.
You're the worst.
Off the chain. It's off the chain. Welcome to this world. It's off the chain.
Hey, nice stash.
I grew it. It's something I've been working on.
That's pretty dirty, Dave.
There's been a lot of discussion about it this evening, actually.
Really?
If you want me to do sound effects, I can do sound effects. The timber wolves around French Creek had gotten out of hand. The farmers couldn't stop them from killing.
I don't think anyone could be against it, and that'd be ridiculous.
Well, people can be ridiculous, Dave.
I know it. Such is life, though, Jordan. Onward we still go.